Welcome to a special edition of Rooster Radio. Andrew.
Hello, James. How are you?
Well, that wasn't much of an intro, I understand. This is a little bit of a different podcast. I guess the motivation behind this podcast is to get some of our thoughts down that's, you know, been quite a topic in our world over the last 2 years.
The reality is we're just trying to make this show more about us.
I think, and we're gaining some success.
Well, this will be how do you define success?
That's such a lame question. the serious part behind this is we continue to speak to people who are living in a fairly sort of standard world with a traditional job, and there's this dream and aspiration to break out and do their own thing. And it's not that we're gurus and it's not that we've got the formula for this stuff, but I think it would be great just to unpack our experiences and what are all the ugly bits about going out on your own at a relatively young age? What are the bits that are great? What are the exhilarating bits? And just sort of explore, you know, how it's been.
And just for context, for our listeners, we're currently in Sydney in what I would probably call a three-star two and a half to three-star hotel. Shout out to the Break Free on George. Here in Sydney, George Street near Pitt Street, overlooking a number of kind of 2.5 to 3-star facilities in Chinatown.
We're certainly not splurging.
No, we're not living the high life.
You can't accuse us of burning money.
This isn't one of those episodes where we're sitting in our penthouse reflecting on, you know, the struggles of early life. We are in the midst of it.
So the first question I've got for you to kick us off is, what was the moment, and we may have revisited this previously, but what was the moment where you knew you were destined to kind of do your own thing?
The moment. I don't think there was a moment. I think it was something I've kind of been born with. Brought up, my dad has always been a small business owner, really, and has always been a man who does things his own way, even to his own detriment at times, I'm sure he would admit. So no one tells Paul Montesi what to do. Can't imagine him working for anyone else. And that was kind of how I was raised. I mean, he had a couple of good stints where he was, you know, in senior management and so forth. But even the way he spoke, kind of the culture of the house was always do your own thing.
So you've always had this mental model, this picture of what it can be like to be running your own small business. It wasn't unfamiliar for you.
Not at all. I mean, even when I've been an employee, you know, early days at the Crows, as we've often talked about, and then reporting at Nine, I was always tinkering with my own thing, whether it was making little websites or kind of thinking about, you know, the next big idea as you do. So, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are exactly like that. They might be at a point in their life where they are employed, but they have this urge to go and start their own thing, whatever it might be. What about you?
No, I'm the complete opposite. And I think one of the things that I remember thinking was that you kind of had to have that typical formula of running a year nine business, you know, like reselling chocolates, or you had to, you know, you had to have a parent who was involved in a news agency or a deli or I always thought that because I didn't have any of that and because I never really had aspirations during school to kind of run my own thing, I just thought, well, maybe I'm not destined to, maybe it's not in my DNA. I didn't have any of those moments of importing, you know, skateboards and reselling them. Which has become a bit of a cliche, I think, for entrepreneurs.
We actually haven't. I don't think you and I have discussed when you had your light bulb moment. I mean, I know you had the idea for Pickstar and all of that sort of stuff, but were you thinking about running your own show during your footy career?
No, not at all. I just remember being at the Fremantle Footy Club, and I remember it was more out of a fear, an irritation, an irritability of being constantly sort of living, you know, told what to do and living within a framework. So it was more me wanting to do my own thing was actually a reaction to not wanting what I had.
Yeah.
And I reckon there's a lot of people that we speak to where they probably fit into that boat. Are they entrepreneurs from the day dot? Do they have these small business ideas? Probably not. But there's a real kind of, pain in their current situation with their current work environment.
I can't imagine you being employed by someone and punching out 9 to 5.
Well, I've never ever punched out 9 to 5. That's the thing with Freo. Even like, we travelled, we had, a weekday off, you worked weekends. So combine that and playing football, you just, I've never had 9 to 5 ever. You clearly,
yeah,
it's well drilled for you.
Yeah, no, I absolutely did. When you're a minion at the Crows, you've got to punch out your standard kind of days. Although, as you said, you do have match days and it's a little bit different. And then, working at the law firm at TGB, that's probably, while the work was, there was great variation in the work, it's definitely still your standard kind of working day.
So you're at the Crows, you've moved to Channel 9, you've gone from Channel 9 to TGB. So you've had a salary for how many years?
Started at the Crows at 19... through to 31.
So yeah, 31. Like 10, 11 years, yeah. 12 years, whatever it is, you've had a salary. Without, giving away numbers, what was the financial situation like? Had you saved a heap of money? Had you invested in a house? Where were you at 31, 32?
Yeah, it's interesting. I, to be brutally honest, earned really poor money at the Crows, of course, as you'd expect. And really poor money at Channel 9. Like you wouldn't even.
But
actually, I'll reveal.
Yeah, the idea is, everyone thinks you're on TV. You've got to be earning 100 grand.
I wasn't even hitting half of that as a sport reporter at Channel 9. I know that there were office administrators and receptionists. No disrespect to these people earning more than what I was as a reporter at 9. And these were the dark days of Win TV ownership, where. Not a single dollar was spent kind of outside your absolute core basic stuff. And admittedly, being cheap was an advantage when I first started. I probably wouldn't have got the job if I had higher demands when I first started at 9. So I was an affordable option. So it was a great way to get in. But, once you hit the four-year mark, you feel like you should be earning a reasonable coin.
So you're mid-20s, mid to late 20s, and you're probably spending every last dollar at the Grand on a Sunday night. You're probably not saving too much.
Yeah, so living with Krugs, Joshy Kruger, just around the corner from the Grand. Yeah, not saving much at all. Got married to my wife. We start thinking, so after putting away at 9 for a while, not really going anywhere from a wage perspective, I think we've discussed in the past my desire to get back into the business and PR and comms and marketing side of things, as well as the ability to earn more, led me to look at this option at TGB, great law firm, big law firm in South Australia, now in Perth and Darwin as well. And invariably over the course of, they gave me a decent wage to start off, then to help solidify me there, gave me a really solid pay rise at the 9-month mark. And then I think even another one not long after a year. I mean, to the firm's credit, they have a really good way of, when they like someone early on, they do their best to kind of make sure that they know that they're liked and that they're going to be retained. So I've gone from earning jack all to starting to earn some really good money from a salary perspective. But I guess a key point there is, never motivated by money. Like for me, it's always been about I just want to be able to do what I need to do from a financial perspective. Get to a point where you need to buy a house. I need to have the capital to be able to do that. If I need to be able to, put food on the table, that basically I don't have to worry about money. That's kind of, I know it's very layman, but that's kind of my thinking with it. So I was able to do that and actually start to put a little bit of money away, buy a house, Frankie, my first kid, comes along. So I'm now in that zone of earning decent wage, typical person with a mortgage, first kid, Pearl comes along a few years after that. So two little kids, mortgage, wage, and then deep down there's the entrepreneurship type of drive that's still stewing away in me while I'm – I guess we're going to talk about this, but you get to that point of the tension between the perceived safety net, the desire to provide lower risk versus your desire to go and do your own thing.
How did you normalize the jump or the transition? And we will get to the mechanics of that, but how did you begin to normalize, sort of make it feel safe in your own mind? What journey did your mind go on over that period of beginning to leave TGB and then start the new thing?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I had, we've discussed in previous episodes, but I was putting away with a startup called TalkLife with a couple of mates, and that was showing signs of things happening, bit of investment, international opportunity. That is a bit of a carrot. It gets you thinking like, oh, you know, if I put more time into that, then there's all this potential. It's the carrot, I think, of doing something amazing, you know, depending on how things go, potentially huge reward at the end of it. And that's when the appetite starts to appear for more, but it's not really based around money. It's just based around the thrill of building something. In terms of normalizing it, well, you start to crunch the numbers and say, like, what's my bare bones? Like, unfortunately, it's a good and a bad thing, I guess, but when you have a mortgage and kids, you can't be like your 18-year-old school leaver who can just take a risk, start a business from, you know, the bedroom at the parents' house. Yeah, I actually have responsibilities, and that's the key. And it's this constant challenge for people in our boat. You actually do have responsibilities. There's a minimum amount of money that I need to bring in. My wife's not working. She's looking after the kids at home. I don't have that ability to say, look, Hannah, you're going to work and I'm going to have a crack at this and not earn anything. Yeah, so
you kind of work out what your figure is. What's that bare minimum? And that comprises of mortgage, discretionary spend, any other debts or car, anything. You just compile exactly it all together and you go,
yep,
these are my fixed costs and this is pretty what I require to live. You get to this point though, and there's a lot of people out there that we've spoken to who have an appetite. They potentially are involved in something which is beginning to show signs, and it goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Nothing happens.
Yeah.
Why? Why do you think people, what's the fear that you think you've encountered speaking to other people?
Oh, other people have this fear that it's all going to go pear-shaped, that, oh, I might leave this safe job that I've got and then it's going to be a huge mistake and then I won't be able to get, you know, it could all go pear-shaped. The startup I'm involved in might fail. I can't go and go back to my safe job. I've got to go and find another job. Oh, crap, I can't find a job at all. Now we're living on the street. Like, anyway. Completely dramatic, and most people, this is the thing, most people here in Australia, we have a pretty safe existence. The worst thing that can happen invariably isn't that bad. And that was always a contextual thing that I've always thought about, is what is the worst that can happen? And most of the time it's like, you know what? It's actually, if the absolute worst happened, I might have to spend a couple of months living in the spare room at the in-laws' house at Coromandel Valley. Yeah, it wouldn't be great, but I'm not on the street. The kids aren't going to go hungry.
I reckon it's a real pattern, and you speak to people that have begun their own thing, and it's that that there might be generalizations, but it's just rationalizing your own mind. What is the worst thing? It seems to be a real key. You know, what is the worst thing that can happen?
And it's a question I ask everyone who finds themselves in that boat. And I had this conversation with someone who contacted me, went to school with her, didn't have much to do with her, but she'd seen that I was doing a few different things and was in her own transitional position. And she just wanted to say, like, you know, I've got this job, but I've got this dream to start this thing, but, you know, like, it's this whole risk thing. And the first question was, think about what is the absolute worst that can happen? And then you go, oh, yeah, you know, it's not that bad. For most people.
My wife, Sarah, and I actually we're going through that period at the moment of analysing where we're at, and, you know, we've got some change, you know, in potentially in addition to, you know, our family. And so
announcement.
Is that a scoop?
It's a Rooster Radio scoop.
Considering I haven't really told many people.
Yeah.
Maybe upload this in about 2 months. but it's the same thing. It's like, well, what is the worst thing that can happen to us right now as we sell – we sell everything and we have some money there and we go and rent. And that's the worst thing that can happen to us.
Yeah.
What in the stories that we've, you know, discovered on Rooster Radio, what are some of the great examples of people working through that that you can remember of people that we've interviewed?
Good question. I mean, I think back to most of them, there's always, almost with every interview actually, there's almost a jump for everyone. You know what I mean? Anyone who's achieved anything, particularly in the business sense, has had to make that jump. I'm just trying to think who specifically comes to mind. I'm thinking of Mark Lands, who we interviewed early on, mainly because he's helping me sell my house at the moment. But he's done exactly that with taking on his family real estate business, which was a bit stagnant, to then really try and take things to the next level. And same sort of position. He's about our age, early 30s, two young kids, stress, you know, people like that. The other option as well is earning the wage is an easier life.
Mm. Is it more secure?
I don't think so. I think that's the massive, massive misnomer at the moment, is that the corporate 9-to-5 is a safety net. I think it's an absolute lie.
Well, we joke about it a bit, but we know lots of friends that live in the corporate world who, you know, are living the so-called secure life, and they're constantly in fear of restructure and redundancy.
Massive job cuts. Like, I've got a mate, an old schoolmate of mine who I won't name, on Facebook. You know, he lives in this world in Melbourne, typical kind of exec at these huge global companies. He's jumped around between a few, and he's been a victim of job cuts. I've got a number of mates who've been victims of job cuts who are very good, well-qualified people, who've even faced this entrepreneurship question and chosen to stay based on the perception of safety. And it's just true. We're out of that era now. Safety, for me, if you understand that we now live in an entrepreneur's economy where there is an absolute premium on the ability to solve complex problems, to be resourceful, to have a multifaceted approach to the way you work in terms of being able to market, being able to sell. Everyone should be able to sell, to have basic understanding of technology at the very least, to understand digital marketing, like these kind of base set of skills. That is safety for me, because you will always be employable.
Oh, I also think that would you rather have stress and anxiety that's out of your control? In other words, I'm fearful that someone's going to walk into my office and tell me I'm made redundant. Or would you rather have stress and anxiety where there's elements of control? So it's like your destiny is in some respects in your own hands.
Yes, absolutely. That's a massive one. That's what I learned really early on when transitioned out of TGB, went part-time, and, you know, there was times where it was really, really lean in terms of paying the bills, but there was almost a bit of a thrill to it. Like, I had the power to change it. I could go and find work. I could go and invoice something out, like just find a way to create income. But when you're just on a fixed wage, that's your ceiling. There's no other way to earn money when you need it. So there's this power now where you can, even though you might have a crappy couple of months, you can go, you know what, there's always a next month. And it requires a certain resilience and a positive frame of mind to be able to do that, but it's critical.
One thing which I'm really keen to learn about is the mechanics of when people make the transition, because I think whilst we talk about jumping the chasm, everyone we've spoken to has been incredibly calculated about minimizing their risk. And I think back to the way it happened for me, where so fortunate to receive a call from John Nailon, who's quite possibly up there with the most influential person in my life to this point. But John sort of said, you know, let's start something. And I said, oh, what are we going to start, you know, in terms of a business? And he said, well, whatever you want. But I reckon Fremantle was a pretty good client to start with. And I said, but I work for Fremantle. How does that, you know, not having been in business at all. And so yeah, we restructured and I went to Fremantle and I actually pitched and I said, hey, you're paying me X amount. How about I work 3.5 days and I focus on the core attributes of my work? You can pay me pro rata less. I will promise you that I will give you the same type of value and everyone wins. And then it gives me a day and a half a week to then go and build my corporate business, knowing that I've got 3.5 days built out every week for a whole year. Like, it's a very luxurious starting point. So that, I guess, was for me the way that the whole jump began. I mean, what happened for you?
Before we go on to my bit, can you go back to this relationship with John? Because you probably haven't spoken too much about this on our show before, but tell us how it came about and go into a little bit more detail about how he helped you with this next step.
I think it's an example. You and I have spoken a lot about the universe and spirituality. For me, this is one of those points in my life that was, you could almost say it's like a lightning rod hitting me in terms of just luck, time, you know, set of circumstances, everything. I was having a beer for the first time with a guy called John Nalan, who was the coach's sponsor of the Fremantle Footy Club. And the coach's sponsor is fairly significant sponsorship, and he runs a marine infrastructure business in Perth. And he just asked me the question one day, and I'd been working at Fremantle for about 2 years, and he said, you know, what are you keen to do with in your life? And I just had this moment of saying, do you know what? Like, I don't want to be institutionalized and I don't want to be in football my whole life. In fact, I went back to Frio not because of the football but because of the opportunity it gave me to learn about corporate structures and senior management, you know, and everything that gave me. So I just said to him, look, you know, one day I'd just love to kind of do my own thing. And that was it. Like, that was it. And then 6 months later, he gave me a call. He used to pop into the club every now and then, and he'd pop into my office and say g'day. But, you know, there wasn't much of a relationship at all until he rang me up and said, hey, you know, I've got a bit of an idea, and, you know, what do you think? But in essence, do you want to start something? And so I just said yes straight away. And that for me is an example of I didn't even know commercially what that was going to mean for me, and I didn't really care. I was probably like you, although for me I was in a luxurious position of being, you know, self-sufficient, and I didn't really have to worry about kids. So I just said, yes, what are we going to do? And then he explained, well, what about we consult back to Fremantle? And then the whole reality and the whole commercial aspect began.
Partner with you in a business sense?
Yeah, so we went into business with a track group with Jason Weber, who was also a strength and conditioning coach at the Fremantle Footy Club, myself and John. And, you know, you skip over a whole load of things to get to this point today, and John is the chairman of Pickstar. I would speak to him most days. That's where the luck aspect, I think, you know, what do they talk about when luck and preparation meet is when success happens, or something along those lines. And I think that was when that moment, I was ready, I was prepared, I had an attitude of wanting to do my own thing, and then just fortune just gave me a tap on the shoulder, and I sort of jumped into it. So
when you have relationships with great people, good things always happen.
Yeah, and we're similar, and this would be interesting, and, you know, John and I have, and yourself, work a lot on faith and trust and, you know, is someone a good person? And you may not have all the details worked out. And this is another bit that I reckon when you're speaking to people who have gone and done their business plans, you know, or they've gone and done their MBA, or they've gone and, you know, sort of mapped out the way that their business is going to work, is that's an important part. But you don't know. There's so much you don't know. And it's not always about the detail. It's about having a faith that it will be okay.
Yeah. And further on to the relationship stuff, just being able to surround yourself with good people, I think I always see people struggle when they're solo founders, and they are truly solo, like they're working by themselves, even at a co-working space, yeah, you're crossing paths with people saying g'day. But I just think to have someone in your trench, you know, you had John when you started out, like I think it's important. And I, like as much as I like working independently, I don't like working alone, if you know what I mean, if you can see the distinction between the two, in that I can work independently on something, but I like to be plugged into a network of other people who kind of get what I'm doing. You can bounce stuff off each other. You need someone who understands what you're going through, particularly when you're making the jump.
What were the mechanics for you?
Mechanics for me, so full-time at TGB, and I won't go into too much detail about the Talklife side of things, my other startup, because I talked through that in an earlier episode. I'll reference it in the description. I can't remember what it was. But the mechanics of the jump was the need for this other startup was growing, that my desire was growing to go and seek other opportunities. Having said that, I was still really enjoying what I was doing at the law firm, loving working with the people there, great partners. That's always the hardest thing, you know, when you've got a really good wage, you're working with the owners of the business who are really good people. It's not an easy thing to walk away from. It's really easy to walk away from a crappy job that you hate. So that was the other big challenge. But, you know, as you said, it comes down to relationship. You can't go and consult back to Frio if you don't have good relationships there. I had good relationships with the firm, so I was able to sit down with a managing partner who has been a mentor to me and say, look, this is what I want to do. And here's, I almost did the same thing as you. I kind of pitched him a bit of a plan about how we could do it, and that I could still give them value at a cheaper financial rate, and still support the firm from a marketing perspective for however long that might be until I kind of commit to my next move full time. And, you know, probably the same with Frio, mate, but as much as there's disappointment, Murray and others had recognised that at some point the time would come when I would do my own thing. This situation was a good transitional period for both of us, in that I'm not exiting within a month and see you later. You're on your own. There's this transitional piece. The numbers always need to stack up from a business perspective, and that if you can pitch them something that's going to cost them less, that's always going to be an incentive. So it just kind of worked out. But, very lucky that I had the relationship to be able to do that. If I wasn't respected at the firm, if they didn't actually rate what I was doing, there's no way I could go and pitch them this part-time setup. I think it was 2.5 days. So 2.5 days to keep on top of the law firm stuff and help train up a young bloke, and then the other 2.5 for me to do my own thing.
So you've effectively reduced your fixed income.
Yeah.
You halved it. In the next or the first 4 or 5 weeks, did you just think, what the fuck have I done?
Yeah, I never thought, like, it was exhilarating to the sense of freedom. It's addictive. Like, almost as soon as I did it, I was like, I actually struggled, particularly after a few months, I struggled to go back to the law firm stuff because, like, it was almost this, you feel like you move on. Mm. And I'm sure other people leave and they instantly regret it because it's not natural to them, but it felt so natural to me to be doing my own thing. So I loved it, even the fact that it was hard.
So some of those hard things, I know we've had a bit of a laugh, but there were times when you were scrapping around, you know, like trying to smash out $100 worth of work, consulting work, and then invoicing that out and doing a few of those a week.
Oh, yeah, there was all sorts. I mean, the Talklife stuff, the other startup, as I mentioned, the funding was inconsistent there, so it wasn't something that I, you know, could bank on necessarily for a period of time. So I started to pick up other bits and pieces, and it really was bits and pieces. Like, I stumbled into this other client who, you know, I had to charge a tiny amount, a fraction of really what I should be charging, just because it was an invoice opportunity and a way to get paid. Not only that, being on 30 30-day terms for an invoice of $150 or whatever it was, and then not getting paid until 60 days, having to chase up crappy little invoices. That's the mechanics of business. Sometimes that's when you go, stuff this, you know, like a wage dropping into my account every couple of weeks looks pretty, you know, pretty tasty right about now. But yeah, at the same time, it was, as you said early on, mate, it was the sense of control. You know what? It's looking pretty lean for the next month. I've got to find some work. Who do I know? Who can I help? Who's interested in what I can offer?
For me, the euphoria bubble was burst when I'd spent 70 to 80 grand on my first website. So I'd been, the consulting was going great for about 2 years, and I then began Pickstar, and you know, I then over a 6 month period burnt 70 or 80 grand of my own money.
Had you saved up that cash?
No. So this was like a loan. So, and I sold my shares and then reinvested that back. So effectively I'm spending debt money to fund Pickstar. And it's easy to spend. Like, it's easy to have positive meetings with web agencies about, you know, the possibility of building a website. But I just had such a, like a down period after I realised that this website was not what it was supposed to be, and what have I done? And this is like, this is the adult world now. This is the big league.
So what did you do then? Because you could have, like a lot of people would do, shut up shop, write it off as a loss and a lesson, move back to something safer.
I'd love to say I just butted up and, you know, like gave myself some positive affirmations and just got back on the horse. But I was actually pretty kind to myself. Like I said, I'm not in a space right now to start again, but I'm not going to drop my bundle. I'm literally going to, in my own mind, I kept saying this in my own mind, this is on ice. This is on ice. Just cool it down, take stock. I don't have to make any decisions. I've got my consultancy, so that's sort of, that's my world. Let's just pause. And I really didn't write it off, but I certainly didn't go again. And you know, obviously, and I've spoken about it previously, but then meeting Nathan Powell again at the tennis club in Perth and an Adelaide boy. And then, you know, he was a real catalyst to kind of kickstart it again. I think that's been a bit of a pattern for me is over the journey, constantly meeting people with energy when you need. And you're a good example of that. Powell was a great example. I think the thing that stands out for me in this process is all the humanistic elements for me are the things that I think successful people nail. Mm. They kind of know themselves. They know what they need, and they find ways to attract those things in their world.
Mm.
So, you know, like, but come back to the really shit times, the down part, you know, for me it's my sleep just gets massively affected. So it's like easy to get to sleep, and then at 3 o'clock my brain wakes up. From 3 to 5 is like this torturous period. If ever I'm stressed, that's kind of how it plays out. And this sick in, for me anyway, you're sick feeling in your guts. You wake up in the morning going, we don't know. I don't know where the money's coming from in about 2 weeks. Mm. Like, it's that palpable. And that's the flip side to the euphoria of your freedom.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at what we've done over the last couple of weeks, and a typical day for us involves some amazing things. There's podcasting, there's trips to Sydney, trips to Melbourne, speaking on panels, there's conferences, there's proposals, there's speaking to sports stars. Like, the list could keep going. Mm. Flip side of that, though, is there's been times when, well, you know, I haven't paid myself. And not only have I not paid myself for 2-3 months, I'm putting my own money back into the business. And that's a feeling, again, I think that most people, you know, if you're not willing to do that, then don't go down your own path, you know.
Yeah.
Don't pay yourself for 3 months and then also transfer 15 grand back into the business, not to pay yourself, but to pay other people.
But how have you been able to make that work financially?
Well, this is the thing. I don't really know. It's just a massive juggle. I remember a couple of years ago, and coming back to Adelaide with the consultancy, it was just kind of a bit of a death knell for it, because you got to start again.
Mm.
And I'd spent 30 or 40 grand in just making the transition back to Adelaide, and we were really lean. I was really lean. I was coming into July, end of June, so it was the end of the financial year. And again, these moments just occur. I got a client who emailed me to say, hey, we're a council. We've had you do some work before, some consultancy work. We want you to do some more. But we also really just need to give you some money right now, because otherwise if we don't spend this budget, I don't get this budget next year. So do you mind if we pay you now and you can just do this next year? Literally, it was like $5,000 or something.
Yeah, that's handy.
Oh, and it was like, you do not know how happy that makes me feel.
Yeah.
And there's just been lots of these little moments where, you know, been doing my own thing now for 7 years, and I have honest faith that stuff works out, even though it doesn't always appear to work that way. So, yeah, what are the times when I guess you've found yourself sort of facing the question in the last 2 years?
Yeah, for me it's been, as we've talked about, a faith that it will always work out. And that's something that's absolutely rock solid for me, that I know that even if the circumstances look ominous, I just know that it will work out. And that is, it's 100%. You have your bad days, and sometimes, and this is the other good thing as well, I'll have a crappy day and start whinging at home, and that's when I got Hannah, my wife, giving me a massive pep up. And she's like that, and she's really good like that. So that, you know, you just can't underestimate how valuable that is, because even when you are high energy and I'm a positive person, you know, we all have our crappy days. And the worst thing you can do is to sink into the mire and start talking negatively about your circumstances. And actually, you shouldn't even really be talking about your circumstances at all in a negative way. Woe is me, you know, oh, this has happened again. Oh, typical me. You know, I'm just unlucky. All this self-talk is bad. I mean, everyone's entitled to their moments, but don't get stuck in it. And that's always been a real key focus for me, is I refuse to get stuck into the circumstances. What else?
Do you think you've actually faced an off-the-cliff situation yet?
Nah, not really. Not to your extent. I've always mitigated my risk to a certain extent. And I've been very lucky that, you know, particularly I've got to a point where Pickstar has been able to support me, which has made my life a lot less complex from a financial perspective. And it hasn't always been the same for you. So that's been amazing.
But
there's never any guarantees.
No, there's no guarantee. But also for me, I feel that it's weird, you know, you talk about self-talk, right? And I see carrying a financial burden or having to put money into a business now is I kind of do it and I feel like it's an attribute. It's a contribution. It's what I can do. And it's weird because 3 or 4 years ago, I used to feel sick transferring money back into the business, or not taking money. And now, and I think this is in large part because I've witnessed the way that John's got about his work and the way that he's dealt with adversity in his life.
It's another investment for you.
Yeah, it's like I'm not necessarily going to be the person who's answering all the emails or looking at all the detail or doing it, but what can I do? What is my contribution? And if my contribution is about smoothing out some of these financial things, and that's a massive contribution. And in a weird way, you're turning what most people would perceive as a real negative into, well, this is a strength for me.
Yeah.
This is what I can do. This is a controllable for me.
Yeah. And to be fair, your ability to cope with stress, like you're pretty unflappable. Like I haven't seen you too frazzled. Well, you know, actually, your way of getting frazzled isn't to freak out and get stressed, but you get a little bit all over the shop to pick up on.
So that's a good point.
Because you're not a detail person.
No, so that's a good point. So what do you notice?
What about you?
Yeah. You're smirking here. Come on.
No. I can tell, not because you'll freak out and worry and start speaking negatively. You've never, ever done that. Yeah, you'll just be a bit distracted, go a bit into your shell, banter's a bit less. You're not having a crack at me about whatever else. And yeah, you'll be a bit kind of go a bit inward. You might miss a few details about things, get a bit confused, a bit frazzled about things, but it's not what I, what's good is that you'll never drop your bundle. Haven't seen it yet.
Interesting part is I reckon when you're under pressure, you go into task mode. You're very good at, you focus in on and you get shit off your list.
Yeah.
Like, so.
The coping mechanism.
Yeah, but it's not always a given. I certainly wouldn't do it like that.
It makes me feel in control and safe. Even when like stuff outside of work, like stress, busy, kids keeping me up, whatever, I feel like work is the only thing I can control. It's the only thing that I, you know, kids, you can't, I have no idea. Like, I'm a dad. I love it. I get it. But you don't know. No one knows what they're doing with a 2.5-year-old and a 4.5-year-old. There's so much unknown with kids. There's so much unknown with relationships, with dealing with people. But with work, I know what I'm doing and I'm good at it. So it's like, I'm just going to bury myself in this because it's the only thing I feel like I can control.
As we begin to round out the conversation, and there will be rapid fire.
What? I'm not prepared.
Some key philosophies, things that have begun to form in your head, you know, key ingredients about this world that we live in.
Ingredients, philosophies.
Well, but while you think of that, I'm going to open up a bit of a Pandora's box here because we talk about it a little bit. Okay. The amount of people out there who will feel like that they are progressing their entrepreneurship by reading, talking, posting, but never really doing or never really putting themselves in vulnerable positions or never really taking a risk.
It's a massive market for it. We always laugh about it. And Gary Vee.
He's a master
and he comes out with outstanding content and he moves a lot of books and he sells a lot of stuff and he charges $100,000 for a keynote and that sort of stuff. And that's great because there's a massive market for entrepreneurs. People get a little G up from a one-minute video on Facebook.
But you know why he's a master? It's because he tells them to go and fucking do something. He tells them to stop listening.
Yeah.
And then they all get off and go, fuck yeah. Not do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's your classic entrepreneur market. But I don't, it's a transferring those people from consuming the content to actually doing the content. I don't know. I don't have an answer for it. I don't know. Do you?
I guess to go on the positive side, all I'd say is that the greatest thing I've ever done is buy my freedom, buy my sort of independence. And I think there's equal portions of stress and anxiety in both worlds, in working for someone. But I'll never want to live in an excuse of, oh, I'd rather be doing that over there. Mm. Like, I can honestly say, I want to be doing what I'm doing. And yes, it's stressful.
And freedom is what we all want. People talk about happiness. People talk about money. They want money to buy freedom. Mm. Freedom is what we all want. And that's what I love about the last couple of years is I've been able to inch my way towards the freedom to do whatever the hell I want. If I want to work 15 hours today.
Well, you tend to just incorporate that as a Pickstar strategy, I've noticed.
Freedom.
Yeah.
Do whatever I want. Yeah. Exactly right.
I'm good at writing blogs, so I think we need to have a blog vision.
Why not?
Let's crank out some
blogs. Strengths. That's what I always think.
Well, this podcast is a good example.
Yeah, well, we didn't know it was – is it a strength?
The 32 people that listen every 3 weeks probably think so. Okay, so –
it's therapy.
Any other – to finish with, any other just key sort of philosophies?
Key thing
– or philosophies.
Key thing is – faith, I think, you know, for me, you know, I believe in God. I have a faith in God. You're on a journey with that. But I think it's whether it's a faith in your own ability. I mean, I think that has limitations, but it'll take you a lot further than if you don't. Having a faith that things will work out, whether it's by your own power or another power, I think is a massive, massive thing. For me, a faith that it's not all up to me is the biggest stress reliever ever, in that I, you know, not feeling like you have to try and control the entire world and your whole life. It's, I don't know how people survive, particularly when you have kids, to have to be relying purely on yourself to get through life. It's a scary, scary place to be, I think.
For me, it's about energy. So do you have the energy and the stores of energy, and do you know how to get energy, and do you know how to sort of maximize influencing other people to jump on board, whether that's, you know, for a coffee or with a vision or with a business idea or even just have fun? Like, I think you need to have an energy that carries across or can carry yourself across a lot of situations, good, bad, and ugly. And and also the understanding yourself so well that you know what you need to plug in around you and being really, really comfortable with the things that you shit at. And I knew a long time ago I'm never going to read contracts and my eye for detail is really small. But I've got other strengths. And so, like, am I going to spend my time beating myself up for the stuff that I'm pretty shit at, or do you plug in strategy, systems, people around you to kind of deal with that?
Well, it's what I said before, playing to your strengths. I think so many people spend a lot of time investing in improving, marginally improving their weaknesses and not actually playing to their strengths and struggling accordingly.
How does rapid fire go when we're...
Can we rapid fire?
No, but how does it go? How does it go? Is it like tennis?
I don't know. But how are we executing it? Is this just what random questions?
Do we have faith that this is just going to work out?
Rapid fire never works out.
Okay. A pivotal book that you've read in this world.
The End of Jobs, which we've kind of touched on in terms of the growth of the entrepreneurship economy and this the changing world of jobs. And if you look it up, like, it's like $3 or something as an ebook, really quick and easy to get through, but it was like a massive eye opener. What about you?
Oh, it's boring, but Tim Ferriss, just because of the time that I read it.
As in 4-Hour Work Week.
Yeah, sorry, 4-Hour Work Week, Tim Ferriss. So it's really like, I feel boring kind of saying it, but it seems
cliche, but it is so good. And anyone who I speak to who's on this journey, I kind of say, read this and then let's talk when you're done.
One business, personal investment regret that you might have.
Regret?
And you can't say, oh, I don't regret everything, they're all learnings.
No. I would hate to say that. I don't know. No, but I kind of don't regret anything. Like,
you're one of those people.
No, but...
Makes really boring.
No, because on
listening.
Reflection, there's things that in the moment I would have looked at, I regret that happening. But now I look back on something that happened that I hated at the time, and it was actually amazing. Like, I mentioned before, applying for the police force and not getting in.
Yeah.
Really, I was just desperate to get out of the Crows because I'd had a guts full. Applied for the police force, didn't get in. I was spewing about that whole period in my life. Hated everything for 6 months. Look back on it now, amazing, formative time. What about you? Do you have, give me your regret and see how I'm on the back of your rapid fire questions, just throwing them back at you. Thank you.
This is going to sound a bit controversial. Do I regret it? Well, I'm going to go on record and say is I regret getting so leveraged in so much debt. Not in a, you know, it's not debt that ultimately kind of cost me, but for the last 6 or 7 years, like, you're on the river. And mainly that's just houses. Like, you know, I've bought a couple of houses and we're not going to change anything and we love it and I love my place. But if I had my time again, would I have bought? I bought a house in 2002, and then I bought a house in 2011. I probably wouldn't have done it. I'd probably wait till now and then buy.
I've been thinking about this as well, because I'm selling my house at the moment and I've got this nagging thought in the back of my head that do I really need to own a house?
Just, yeah, anyway.
And every day I change from I shouldn't be owning a house to I should own 5 houses by now. What am I doing? And every day I change.
Two people that have been influential for you.
Two people. My dad, obviously. I flagged that already. Dad's been the big one. Then there's been lots of people at various stages of my life. Maurie Bales, who I've mentioned from TGB, was massive for me. I think just really influential in those early years at TGB. Everyone needs someone to back them in, give them the encouragement. And he was one of those guys. You know, I'd come from a journalism background and all of a sudden given responsibility for marketing and all this other stuff at a firm, and felt like sometimes a bit of a stab in the dark what I was doing. So to have a bloke with many years' experience, amazing businessman, lawyer, to kind of back you in, that's massive. What about you? John. You've got John.
I'm going to say Chris Scott as the second.
Chris Scott. And you should, if you haven't already, listeners.
And this is not cross-promotion.
Let's give it a cross-promotion. Come on.
No, it's not cross-promotion. But you know when you find yourself listening to what someone says and then you're constantly replaying that in your mind, and then you might think about that 3 years later, or you'll use their philosophy on something as a bit of a reference point or a benchmark, or at least you might disagree with it, but you really want to know why you disagree with it.
Hmm.
So I find Scotty's probably, second one.
How do you handle stress? I mentioned that I can see stress on you and your responses, but how do you manage it? What is what's therapeutic for you?
Oh, that's anti-rapid fire, that question.
From drugs.
I'll go on record to say that I don't reckon I've got it nailed. I reckon I'm continually learning about how I deal with this properly. So I'm not going to sit here and go, well, I'm this kind of calm sort of being,
zen
kind of being. I think this sounds funny, but I'll begin each day, and at the top of my notepad, I usually write just something that comes into my head. Like, this is a day of stop avoiding your fears, or it's okay to be anxious, or I'm stressed today. Like, it sounds stupid. I just write it on the top of my bit of paper and it kind of like puts it down there. What else would I? Exercise is huge. I'm really battling at the moment because I don't get the time and I've made excuses to not exercise. So I'm not doing that and that doesn't help. I find time to think, and for me anyway, I need to just remove myself from a situation. So let's just say work was at its peak of stress, I'd actually leave the office. I'd go for a ride for 2 hours, or I'd go for a walk. Like, I have to remove myself from the situation to get myself back into a mode where I'm ready to go again. I think you could smash out some work to begin to get yourself back on the right track.
Yeah.
Whereas I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're probably the main things. You?
The positive affirmations are a big thing. Just speaking out positive things, kicking off your day. Like, it sounds corny, and even as I say it, it sounds bloody corny, but it sets you off on the right frame of mind and the right, it sets the tone for your day. If you wake up and you start talking about all your problems, you're setting the tone. So that's a big one. Fitness is a massive barometer for me. Just getting gym sessions in, like, I might spend 40 minutes doing a weight session, and the actual session itself might be really average, but it's the psychological therapy of just going into a weights room. You know, the weights don't talk back. You go in there and you're just pushing iron, and wait. And it's so simple and it's just so therapeutic. And if I'm not doing that, then I start going a bit insane.
Last question is one thing you want to improve on. Even though we don't want to focus on our strengths, but if you could improve something, what would you improve? Let's guess. Oh, I should delegate more. I should work-life balance.
Why don't you just answer the question for me then, you knob? Now, I'm not a great people manager. Because I think because I am very, you know, get things done type of person, I think I have unrealistic expectations of people sometimes, in that that's like I have a pretty good work ethic. I generally get a fair bit done in a day. I have an expectation that everyone else is in the same frame of mind as me, put in extra, push hard, understand what I'm thinking and take initiative, even though I haven't told you. So I find that, yeah, I think the people management and just dealing with people who aren't exactly in the same frame of mind as me. And that doesn't necessarily, like, not everyone has to be in the frame of mind that we've spoken about today in terms of entrepreneurship and pushing hard and bettering yourself. Not everyone's like that, and that's fine. And I think just the ability to be able to extricate myself and to be able to work, understand people a bit better and manage, like, maybe terrible is a bit harsh, but I'm not a manager. What about you?
For me,
we're approaching an hour, by the way. This chat was supposed to be 20 minutes.
No one will be listening to this one. I think for me, the thing that I would love to be able to do is make decisions quicker, like complex decisions quicker. Like I feel like I just sit on things way too long and then it will come to me and then I'll be happy in my decision. But I know that I've wasted like days up to that point.
I haven't noticed that you're a slow decision.
It shits me. Like there are some things really, and I don't put the time into kind of just thinking about it and go, right, let's just sit down and nut this out in my head. I'll avoid it. And then it will come to a point where I have to make a decision, I'll make a decision.
You know, there's a whole nother episode on decision making.
Oh, there you go,
I love it. That's the other thing that I love about being in this space is I like putting my nuts on the line for decisions. And whether they go right or wrong, I think that's a massive problem for a lot of people is decision making. Like even though you're kind of saying you could improve that area, mate, like I know people who are quite literally paralyzed by decision making. It's actually super common.
Well, there's a little teaser for the next one that we'll do for the next trip. And I'm going to throw to you, Monty, to finish off.
Thank you, my friends, for listening to Rooster Radio. If you're still here, we're at about 58 minutes. Check out our website, roosterradio.biz. Sign up to our mailing list because we really want to know who you are because iTunes subscriber data is really poor. We get a little bit of information from our host at SoundCloud. We want to know who you are. We want to connect and we also want to hear your stories as well. So reach out to us. That's roosterradio.biz. There's a sign-up form. Our emails, our contact details are on there. Let's keep in touch. Thanks for listening.